fair.
So yeah, they see you when you come, they see you when you go, and when you go, that's when they come and do stuff. You know, that's why I had to start putting a lock on my fence. They were stashing drugs in my yard. Mm-hmm.
So, how long has your family lived in the South?
My father was in World War II. He was stationed at Fort Knox. And when he got out of the war, September 1st of 1946, he and my mother bought this house.
Okay, so where was he originally from, Louisville? Or
no, my father's from New Orleans and my mother's from Monticello, Arkansas.
Okay, and what were their names?
My father is Frederick Higgins.
Okay.
And my mother is Elnora Tolliver Higgins. Very well, yeah, well, I don't know whether I want to put, let's say Elnora Higgins, how about that?
Okay.
Because too many security codes ask for your mother's maiden name, so yeah. I can call, I guess. You could break into my life or something.
So did you grow up in this house?
Yes, I did grow up in this house when I came home from the hospital. This is the house I grew up in. This is my family home.
Uh-huh. And kind of working well.
This is my family dog, Emma.
And so, what was Russell like when you were growing up here?
Well, Russell, right next door in this building, we had a bakery. We had a hair salon. We had a cobbler. There were apartments in there. And I used to walk around the corner just to get my hair done as a child. Just mm-hmm. right around the corner. Lay next door. She just died in November. She was an elementary school principal at Coleridge Taylor. Lay in that white house there. She was the elementary school principal at Candy Elementary, where my mother taught. Just the next block over, my father had a business, Rose and Higgins Funeral Home.
Okay.
Two doors down was the house of one of the original owners of a bar on Walnut Street. And by the time I came along, he was already dead, but I knew his widow, and I knew his dog.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they're dead now. And I can't say I remember who he was, but he was one of the original owners. But we could probably find property owners
yeah.
For that address. It would be 2609, I believe. It's 2605, 2609. But in the next block, excuse me, just a second. Alrighty. So anyway, in the next block, it was the doorman at the Brown Hotel. He lived there, and you know, back in the 40s, those were good jobs for black men. You know, that was a mm-hmm. job of prestige. In the next block, May Street Kid lived, and she was a state legislator.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Russell that I grew up in, and that's the Russell I know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Russell of my childhood.
Did they call it Russell back then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, what year were you born?
Are you going to put that in there? I guess I'll tell you, 1958.
Okay, so...
1958, and my parents bought the house in 1946,
okay.
September 1st of 1946, and this house has been in my family ever since.
Yeah, I asked because the Russell name didn't really come till the 60s.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because I talked to, do you know Elmer Lucille Allen?
Mm-hmm. I do. You know, my mother went to college with Elmer Lucille Allen.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At Nazareth?
Nazareth.
She had told me when she was growing up, it was just the West End, and she didn't know where Russell came from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I talked to Ken Clay,
mm-hmm.
and he worked with some poverty program,
mm-hmm.
and when they were they were looking at the neighborhoods. They named them all after the junior high school.
Okay.
So the junior high school was named after Harvey Russell, so they called this neighborhood Russell.
I gotcha. Okay. Alrighty. I gotcha. I did not know that, but that's good information. Yeah. And I think later on, you know, Louisville got into this neighborhoods concept, so I guess every neighborhood had to have a name.
Uh-huh.
You know, like Germantown all of a sudden became Schnitzelburg and all that kind of stuff.
So when did you sense that the neighborhood was changing?
Well, basically, my parents and their peers started getting older. Mm-hmm. And first of all, my parents were a victim of redlining, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so I feel like I'm the second generation victim of redlining, because right now I couldn't get any more from my house than my parents paid for it in 1946.
Uh-huh.
Now, the way you build equity is home ownership, but uh-huh. I'm not going to have equity out of the house. And, you know, I realized that. I have friends that lived in Portland, and when mom had to go to a nursing home, they sold the house, and that's what pumped mom into the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be able to, I don't have that opportunity, and that's just Portland, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we know there's a history of disinvestment in the neighborhood. I guess when I was growing up, I had all the role models of those professional ladies who went to work, and their expectations. And, you know, they were my role models. And I guess, hi, good morning. And I guess when they got into their 80s, maybe that's when the neighborhood started to change, you know. The man that owned this building, I guess, tried to sell and he couldn't sell it. And so basically you had people coming in and getting government grants, but then they weren't very... what's the word?
They were absentee landlords, or just wasn't invested in people.
They would get government money, but for example, at one point there were 5 sex offenders living next door. According to the federal government grant, they weren't supposed to have 5 sex offenders left.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're landlords. They don't live here. They live in other parts of the city, and I call it disrespect for the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
you know, they call it disrespect. I think it's when, you know, she got in her 80s, she got in her 80s, my parents got in their 80s, you know, and I guess they just weren't able to, you know, be as vibrant as they were when they were going back and forth to work every day. That lady over there, she was a school teacher, you know, she and her husband have been dead for years now, you
mm-hmm.
know. There's an empty lot now. That lady was the school teacher, and the reason that lot is empty is because we don't know for a fact, but we think it was a meth house. Well, anyway, at 2:00 in the morning or thereabouts, the house burned, the one in the middle burned, and the fire was so intense it burned the houses on either side. So now we have 3 vacant lots, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those houses, that burned, that was a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew every one of them, and they knew every one of me and my brother. My parents planted this tree, this holly tree,
mm-hmm.
and it used to be so little, when my brother and I used to run around the yard, we could throw snow over it.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be, look, it's taller than the house now. This is my family history.
So, with this new latest revitalization effort, have you seen, does it give you hopeful? Are you hopeful, or have you seen any signs of improvement?
Well, revitalization in the West End usually means tearing down the history and putting up something else. We've already seen that happen when they tore down old Walnut Street for a freeway. So revitalization for us is not revitalization, it's destroying. That's the way I look at it. And right around the corner is the I. Willis Cole House. Well, the city tore that down. It has a historical market, but right now it's a vacant lot with a historical marker in front of it. My father knew I. Willis Cole.
Uh-huh.
He worked with I. Willis Cole and I. Willis Cole was one of the first publishers of a black newspaper here in Louisville.
Louisville Leader?
Yeah, Louisville Leader. Yeah, yeah. My father remembers the night that Aaron Cole, I. Willis's Cole, son was born. Mm-hmm. I see my father worked in the post office. A lot of black men worked in the post office because that was the only job they could get. My father used to talk about it. You had doctors, lawyers, all kinds of men, black men with all kinds of degrees, but that was the only job they could get, was mm-hmm. the post office. You know? And so my father worked at the post office. Next door to that lady there, there was another teacher, Alice Stringer. Mm-hmm. You know? So that lady is dead. This lady is dead. My parents are dead. The funeral home has been converted to a private residence. Mm-hmm. I never met the doorman at the Brown Hotel. I don't even know his name, but I never met him. My first job was at the Chestnut Street, the West End Branch Library, right there on 10th and Chestnut. Mm-hmm. And that was the first library that black people could use here mm-hmm. in the nation. What people don't seem to realize is they wanted a library for black people. And they had, back then, the libraries had different designations, A, B, and C, and that had the designation of C, and people thought it stood for colored, but it didn't. It really didn't. But what I'm saying is, local leaders, and it was Mary Alice Deering, and her husband was Judge Deering, they called the NAACP in New York, and they sent none other than Thurgood Marshall down here. Mm-hmm. And Thurgood Marshall filed the suit, and that library got opened. And keep in mind, Thurgood Marshall was the only attorney they had, so he was always on the road, going here, going there, going there. No one seems to know that. That's the other thing that's really bothering me. No one seems to know this. The only reason I know it is because Mary Alice Deering, you know, said it in a meeting that history is not being written down. The history we have is being torn down. That's one of the reasons why I refuse to leave my home, and this is my home, even though, you know, when I, you know, graduated from college, I asserted my independence and bought a house somewhere else. You know, I never left here. Well, I was always here, and I refuse to sell this house. This is my home. The church on the corner there, that was a Catholic church. The Catholic church closed it. My father was the deacon there at the Catholic church.
Mm-hmm. Which one was it?
St. Charles Borromeo, and they renamed it St. Charles Lavanga after an African martyr.
Yeah. That's been one way I've been able to kind of track where people are through the churches and the funeral homes.
Mm-hmm.
So, later this week, I'm going to meet with the Ratterman family because mm-hmm. they started out in Russell.
Oh, did they?
Okay. Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
The first funeral home was at 21st and Market.
Is it still there? There's a Ratterman's on Market right now.
Yeah.
Is it still there?
I know that they have a building there because that's where we're going to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to, I know at one time they were using at least the top of it for a music studio because
mm-hmm.
one of their kids is a music producer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But,
I wasn't aware of that.
The beginning, this neighborhood had a lot of Germans mm-hmm. and Irish to... Mm-hmm. A lot, and African Americans all living in close proximity to each other because, you know, you had to walk everywhere so they could move out. And so the George and Herman Ratterman, the ones that started their family business, they came from Germany in the 1850s and they set up on 11th and Green Street.
Okay.
And they were cabinet makers. But during the Civil War, they became a coffin. They started making coffins.
Mm-hmm.
And then George's son, John, became the first funeral home director. And he had 12 kids. And he set them all up with their in the funeral home
business.
You know,
Cletus Ratterman, the Rattermans are Catholics. And Cletus Ratterman was one of the deacons. I told you my father, at the time he died, was the oldest Catholic deacon. And so... I knew Cletus Ratterman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he died right before my father did.
But a lot of the churches, like St. Peter's, mm-hmm. was a German Reformed church and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I've been talking with a lot of German mm-hmm. Church experts and things like that.
Well, the man who owned this building was Mr. Wirth. He was German.
Okay.
And he was a cobbler. And he was the one that owned this building. He doesn't own this building anymore.
Yeah.
But he was German.
Mm-hmm. And you see it, once you look for it, when you go around the neighborhood, mm-hmm. you notice the architecture and everything has mm-hmm. that German element to it.
Well, Borromeo, I think that's German. I think St. Charles Borromeo, I think that's a German saint, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to college?
I went to the college. I went to University of Louisville. Go Cards.
Did you go to Central High School? Or?
I did not go to Central High School. I'm Catholic. I went to Sacred Heart.
Sacred Heart.
Yeah, I'm Catholic. By the time it was time for me to go to elementary school, the St. Charles school had closed. So I wasn't able to go to that.
Okay.
You know, St. Augustine right there on Broadway was a church established in 1864, I think, for the slaves or the newly freed slaves. And so we were there for a while. You know. Okay. We're talking. Adults are talking.
Yeah, the black Catholics don't really get a lot of attention in the histories, I've noticed.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. Well, and part of it is, you know, the Catholic Church withdrew from Russell. They sold this church. They chose St. Benedict over there on the Sage. They do have St. Martin de Porres on Broadway. But, you know, that's one of the things I say. When the churches leave and the businesses leave, basically other elements start to creep in, you know.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the reasons why I refuse to leave. I'm pushing back.
Uh-huh.
I'm pushing back. You know, when I was in school, I used to walk to church every Sunday. My father and I would walk to church every Sunday, and then in the summer I go to Mass every day at 5:30. I just walk to Mass. Mm-hmm. I don't have that opportunity. Church is closed. Mm-hmm. Church is closed. You know, so basically, I did a talk on poverty April 18th of last year, and I talked about the poverty of spirit, basically, when the churches leave the community.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it gets backfilled with something
mm-hmm.
less than godly.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is with tearing down and all that kind of stuff, you look at places like old Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were saying, right now they're tearing down Beecher Terrace and rebuilding it, however. You know, they wouldn't have torn down old Louisville. They would have rehabbed it
mm-hmm.
and refurbished it, and that's what they did. They would not have torn it down, but they tore down Beecher Terrace. Basically, they destroy and they come back with something that's unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm. I'm writing a story about the Castleman statue controversy.
Yeah.
And people are talking about destroying history. And someone I talked to said they destroyed Walnut Street. They didn't.
Yeah, they destroyed black history all the time. You know? I think nothing of it. Well, it's not good enough anymore. We're going to. And, you know, it'd be one thing if they came back with something that resembled or, you know, like sometimes they keep the facades or sometimes they rebuild something that looks exactly like what it was before but it's updated. No, they're coming back with something that's not even recognizable, you know, from what I can tell. You know, with the Chestnut Street, the Western Branch Library, I've heard the story where Prince actually gave them some money once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody seems to know that story, but nobody knows about the Thurgood Marshall story. that the history is not being written down, it's not being recorded. And I keep on saying you really need to talk to Mary Alice Derry. I know she's 90 plus.
Oh, yeah, is she still around?
Yes.
I would love to talk to her.
Yeah, Judge Derry's wife. You need to talk to her because no one seems to know the story.
Do you know her number?
No, okay. And I never knew her personally. I just happened to be in the room with her when she was telling the story. And I was like, wow, I never knew that.
Well, I'll reach out to her because I have some other people I need to talk to.
And like I said, with her, time is of the essence. She's 90 plus. You know, she's 90 plus.
I'll get that.
And then you talk to the staff at Western Branch Library now, and they have a completely different story about, you know, who started that branch. And it's probably some white people or something, but, you know.
Well, Mazik gets all the credit for it.
Well, the NAACP was involved, and Thurgood Marshall came down from New York to Louisville and filed suit.
Okay.
And like I said, Mary Alice Derry says it, so I don't think she's making that up.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she was probably part of what the citizens that called NAACP. Look at that dog. The NAACP and said, look, we need some help down here. And they sent Thurgood Marshall, you know. Now that's a part of Louisville history that,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think about the first black librarian at Louisville Free Public Library, and that was...
Thomas Ballou?
No. She and my mother went to school together. I can see her face. Barbara Miller. She's dead now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you think during Black History Month they would at least put her picture up, but no, they don't put her picture up. She's one of those hidden, forgotten features. She was called the Story Lady, and I used to go to Story Time at the main library. Barbara Miller. She and my mother were in college.
Mm-hmm.
At Nazareth. And let me tell you, when my mother came to Louisville, when my father was in the war at Fort Knox, she went to Nazareth because, you know, she couldn't have gone to University of Louisville. You know, they had municipal college, which was segregated. So she went to Nazareth. So that's the Catholic Church, which has a history of educating African Americans. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's her, Lucille Allen, Barbara Miller. They were all there together.
Okay.
I mean, those are the people that were my black history. I mean, I'm just talking about the last generation. Not two generations ago. I'm talking about my mother and her friends and people she was in college with.
Well, you're a wealth of information.
I'm just talking about my history, my life. And it all happened right here on Chestnut Street.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to University of Louisville and got my business degree and my engineering degree, I drove back and forth from this house.
Mm-hmm.
I drove back and forth from this house. And I got my engineering degree, and I went to business school at night, and it was cold, and it was dark, and I'd come home. My father was sitting there in the front, and I would sit there and read my mail and knit and all that kind of stuff. It happened right here. You know, it's all happening at the zoo. It's all happening right here at 2605. You know.
Was it...
Morning.
There's not a lot of female engineers now, so was that a struggle? Like,
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. It was a funny engineering story. I was a chemical engineer, and there were two other black women. And the chemical engineering building in the University of Louisville is separate from the rest of the engineering school. Well, if you go to University of Louisville, you've got Eastern Parkway, and you've got all of U of L on this side of Eastern Parkway. On the other side of Eastern Parkway, you've got Speed School first. So first of all, you've got the Eastern Parkway divide. And then the chemical engineering building has its own building apart from the rest of Speed School. So anyway, there were only three black women when I went to engineering school in the chemical engineering building. The other two were a year ahead of me, and they chose not to speak to me for whatever reason, you know, which I thought was interesting, but, you know, that's the way you feel. That's the way it is, you know, go for it, you know. But they chose not to speak to me. And if you saw that movie, Hidden Figures, remember they were talking, they had to go to another building to go to the bathroom. Actually, I have my own bathroom story. When I was in engineering school, I've got allergies and I've got pollen in my throat.
Do you need a cough drop?
Good.
Yeah, fine.
You haven't had one? Oh, thank you.
Same problem.
Right, right. So, anyway, in the chemical engineering building, there was only one female bathroom, and it was on the first floor, and that was for the secretaries. And so you got a three-story building, and you've only got one women's bathroom, and that's on the first floor. So, got to plan ahead. Then I went to my first job after I got out of engineering school, and we were in Waterston Towers, and we had four floors, I think 9 through 11 or 9 through 13. The floor where I worked on, they decided that there were too few women and too many men, so they changed one of the women's bathrooms into a male bathroom, so they had two women's bathrooms, so if I had to go, I had to either go up or go down.
Mm.
So I have my own bathroom stories.
So what company did you work for?
It was CNI Gerdler at that time.
Oh, okay.
It was a consulting firm. It was my first engineering job out of college.
So did you end up retiring from engineering, or?
Well, I retired from Louisville Water Company after working there for 21 years. And I'm a financial advisor now, and people are like, well, how did you do that? Well, I have a degree in chemical engineering, I have a degree in finance. And I got both of those degrees. I wanted to combine the two and go into management. I worked for a utility, which was very conservative, and that didn't happen. So I thought, well, I can keep on doing what I've been doing, or I can use this degree, which I've never used. Funny story about, well, it's not funny, story about local water company. At one point, I was working for a man who had no college at all. He was a high school graduate. And he made the same amount of money I did, and he was my boss. And the thing about it was, he could have gotten his college education for free because his father was dean of the music school. You know, he could have gotten it for free. And I told my father about that. My father said, that's just the way it was 50 years ago in the post office. You know, that's the way it was 50 years ago in the post office. And that's one of the things I talked about when I talked about poverty. This time, you know, a year ago, April 18th, a year ago. You know, basically, you know, I have two college degrees, I have all this, but I get to work for a white man, you know, who makes the same amount of money, didn't do any of the investment that my parents did. And so that created a poverty of, just poverty period, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had a nice engineer salary, but he had an engineering salary with no engineering degree. He didn't even have a physical education degree, he had no degree, none. One time they did a posting for a job when I was still at Louisville Water Company, and they wanted a certain, designation. I didn't have it, so I didn't apply for it. Well, they awarded the job. Lo and behold, the person they awarded to, a white male, didn't have that designation either, even though they had it in the posting. And I said, well, wait a minute. I thought you had to have blah, 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 blah. Oh, we're going to give him a year to get it. Now, they didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to give him a year. So guess what? They gave him a year. He still didn't get it. Mm-hmm. I think he couldn't get it or he flunked it. And he kept that job for a year and a half without having the designation, the posting. You know, so it's institutional racism. It really, really is.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really is. And that's in my lifetime.
Well, you know, redlining is still going on.
Oh, yeah.
I see it, especially in insurance rates.
Precisely. You know, I've had a heck of a time trying to insure this house, and that's one thing I have to work on. And like I said, I have my job, I have my clients. So this is something I do on top of everything else. You know, they want to say, well, we don't want to insure your house, you know, blah, 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 blah. So there's something called the FAIR plan. I don't even understand the FAIR plan, but it's something that they've instituted for the West End of Louisville, and basically is to disenfranchise people. So if something terrible happened over here, basically I would just suffer a loss. You know, I'd get a little bit of money, but I wouldn't be able to get what I need to rebuild this house, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, but that's, they've told me that's all I can get, and I haven't had a chance to dig into it.
Really?
Like I said, I still have a job, but you're right. There are different rules for the West End. There are different. different rules for the West. And people are like, oh, you can just do, no, you can't. You know, I live in St., I have a house in St. Matthews. I have this house here. I live in both places. I'm in both places every day. The difference is night and day.
Mm-hmm.
There are different rules for the West End.
Well, and I had a niece who, she lives with her father, and she was trying to get insurance in her name, and it was going to be too high.
What, car insurance or house insurance?
Car insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And she did a quote using Meyer address in the South End, and it was almost half as much.
Yeah. Well, Jessica Green, who's a council person, she just got married. Her husband lived, I don't know where he lived, but he moved in with her, and his insurance, when he, you know, put, you know, because he's living with her now, his insurance rate, like you said, immediately doubled just by his address, because now he lives with his wife.
Uh-huh.
Same driver, same car, same everything.
Yeah.
Same everything. So you're talking about an area that's disenfranchised to begin with, but then that's the tax of being black.
Uh-huh.
That's the West End tax. There are a lot of good people in the West End, but we're not getting a lot of support. Uh-huh. I say they let things go on in the West End of Louisville that they wouldn't let go on anywhere else.
Uh-huh.
That they wouldn't let go on anywhere else in Louisville. They wouldn't let go on in Hurstbourne Lane, you know, but they seem to think it's acceptable to do this in the West End of Louisville. Case in point, one of the many things, but when they were trying to do that methane plant in a residential area, you think that would have happened in Hurstbourne Lane? No. Nobody would have even thought about that. That's disrespecting. That's disrespecting. And we know because of Rubber Town that the high incidence of cancers in the West End of Louisville. I remember growing up, in the summertime, 10 o'clock at night, you could smell the neoprene in the air, you know, and I'm several blocks away from Rubber Town. You know where Rubber Town is, but they were just dumping that stuff in the air. And there have been studies about health disparities and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's genocide.
Yeah. Well, that's all the questions I had. Is there something I didn't ask you about that it's important? I'm going to try and get in touch with Ms. Steering.
Mm-hmm. That business over there used to be a gas station.
Uh-huh.
Now it's a liquor store. You know?
Yeah.
You know, Russell needs to be rebranded. And I'm trying to work on rebranding Russell. I'm trying to stabilize my block. Fortunately, some of the people that move in, I'm talking about this house next door, they move from other parts of the city because they have engaged in behavior that they cannot engage in other parts of the city. So they come into my neighborhood and try to do that. And, you know, and then wrap it in, oh, we're helping the neighborhood. Well, no, not really. No, not really. No, we're helping the neighborhood. Russell is 96% white. That building is 99%. I mean, Russell's 96% black. That building is 99% white. What are they doing for the neighborhood? You know, what are they doing? You know, that house over there that used to be, it used to be the teacher's house. I mean, we've got sex offenders and all that in there, but they're not even Louisvillians. They come from other parts of the town, other parts of the state, you know, from Florida and all that. So why are they ending up in my neighborhood? You know, they're not on Hurstbourne Lane, no, they're ending up in my neighborhood. So, you know, we're not even serving, I don't know, I don't know how to describe it, and some people will think I'm being disrespectful to people who are down on their luck. That's not my intention at all. But if it wasn't good enough for your neighborhood, why is it good enough for my neighborhood? You know, if it's that great, put it next door to your house. You know, if you came from Mutual Prospect or whatever because you couldn't behave in that way, it makes you think you should come in my neighborhood and behave in that way. And I had a terrible time with the people next door coming and sitting in front of my house. You know, basically they don't provide them outdoor seating. Why? I'm not sure. Well, that's not my fault. You know, you need to provide your own seating. You know, I'm not it. I'm not running a sober house, you know. So it's not that I disrespect the people who are less fortunate. That's not it. But, you know, just some of the things
that it's the concentration of, like, sober living houses and things in one neighborhood.
Well, you know, they're kind of faded now, but we had daffodils that my brother planted around that fire hydrant. I mean, three seasons of the year, there are flowers around that fire hydrant. They treat it like an ash can. I mean, butt after butt after butt after butt. And I'm supposed to put up with that? I'm supposed to think that's okay? I'm trying to beautify the neighborhood. Did you see those two signs when you drove up on that vacant lot that said Love Russell?
Yeah.
I, 1619, I guess, had some kind of project. So they were looking somewhere to put it. I said, well, put it on my lot. Okay. So we put it on my lot. But before that, before the election, you know, we wanted people to vote. So I had a sign up there that said vote, you know, and it was lit up at night. And then, I think it was late October, I had an outdoor light show, just a pop-up public art display. So, you know, I'm trying to elevate and uplift the neighborhood and, you know, bring back all the elements that weren't there and elevate them. Maybe, you know, people won't see it as a dumping ground. People won't see it as, I don't know, as a... I don't know, you know, however they see it, but it's not positive, because that guy over there at one point had something on the internet disparaging the neighborhood, and he doesn't even live here. He's from New Jersey, you know, he doesn't even live here. He doesn't know anything about the history of the neighborhood. And then I did a little bit of research on him. He has a felony conviction out of Florida, so, you know, now if I had a felony conviction out of Florida, do you think I could go to Hurstbourne Lane and do all this stuff? No. No, but he can, you know. So, I don't know if I told you, you know, what you were interested in.